Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And yes, by the way, we are collecting your photos, if you have any, or even your descriptions of your 2016 political Halloween costumes, and we'll talk about them and take a look at a few later this hour. So if you had a politically themed Halloween costume for your adult Halloween party over the weekend, or that you're going to walk around the neighborhood with your kid in tonight, take a snap of it or just describe it and tweet it at Brian Lehrer, at Brian Lehrer, and we'll talk about it later in the hour. Meanwhile, so many workers in America these days, and so many in a city like New York, are freelancers, right? Well, on Thursday, the New York City Council passed a bill they're calling the Freelance Isn't Free Act to give freelancers a set of protections against wage theft and other exploitation. The measure is especially timely with the boom of the gig economy, a term used to describe temp workers, contract workers, independent contractors, Uber drivers, and other freelance workers. Estimates place the number of these types of workers at 4 million in the New York metro area. My next guests played key roles in shaping the Freelance Isn't Free Act. They are Brooklyn Councilman Brad Lander, who chairs the Committee on Rules, Privileges, and Elections and is a founding co-chair of the Council's Progressive Caucus, and Sarah Horowitz, founder and executive director of the Freelancers Union and co-author of the book, The Freelancer's Bible, Everything You Need to Know to Have the Career of Your Dreams on Your Terms. So welcome back to WNYC, Councilman Lander and Sarah Horowitz.
Thanks for having us.
Wonderful to be here. Thank you.
So Brad Lander, what's in the Freelance Isn't Free Act?
Thanks so much, and I want to give huge credit to Freelancers Union and Sarah and to all of the freelancers and independent contractors who testified, came out, and spoke up and made clear what a real epidemic this is. I think a lot of people know it. If they've done freelance work, most people have encountered non-payment at some point or late payment or being forced to accept less than they were owed, but it hasn't been something people focused on until Freelancers Union really lifted it up. And what we wanted to do, and what we did last week by passing this law unanimously, 51-0, is to give freelancers and independent contractors some of the same kinds of protections against wage theft that traditional employees who get a W-2 are. They now will be able to get double damages and attorney's fees and civil penalties and have the assistance of the New York City Department of Consumer Affairs in collecting what they're owed. And it all begins with having a written contract, which is obviously a good idea, but now will be a requirement of the law. So it's clear, simple contract, what the work is, what the amount owed is, when the payment's due, so you can make sure and enforce your rights. And you'll also have a right to timely payment to get paid 30 days after that work is done.
And that would be a contract required for any kind of freelance work or contract work that's at least $800 over a four-month period.
That's right.
So that's a pretty low bar, but there are a lot of little freelance jobs that would fall short of that. Why a threshold at all, Sarah?
Well, what we really wanted to do was to make it so that if you're a working freelancer, you can be sure that you don't have to spend so much of your time chasing that payment, and also to really recognize that below that, we have to be thinking about additional strategies. But I think in particular here, whenever you talk to a freelancer, you just see how terrible it is. We found by our studies that the average freelancer has lost $6,000. And when you take all the freelancers in New York together, it's about $1 billion, which really impacts the tax rolls for New York. So think of all the things we could have paid for had we just appropriately gotten freelancers paid. And just also really want to take a moment to really recognize that we're really starting to build this next safety net. And New York took the first step in showing the nation how it's done. And Brad Lander and his leadership and the council leadership did such a great job that it moved to the point of being unanimous. You can just imagine that we should be doing this across the country now.
And listeners, our phones are down today for call-ins, but you can tweet your freelance protection questions or your 140-character stories about yourself as a freelancer at Brian Lehrer. Your freelance questions, welcome here at Brian Lehrer on Twitter for Brooklyn City Councilmember Brad Lander and Sarah Horowitz, Executive Director of the Freelancers Union, on the new Freelance Isn't Free Act, which passed New York City Council last week. Just tweet your question or your comment at Brian Lehrer. By the way, Brad Lander, is the mayor going to sign this, as he said, one way or the other?
We're very optimistic. I don't think he has said publicly yet, but we worked very closely with the new commissioner of the Department of Consumer Affairs, Lorelei Salas, and the new director of the new Office of Labor Policy and Standards, which the administration, the de Blasio administration, just set up and is doing a great job. And they worked very closely with us to finalize the details of the bill and the role that that office and department will play in implementing the law, which we're also really excited about. You will be able to go straight to court if you want to, you know, with double damages and attorney's fees. It'll be a lot easier to find a lawyer to take a good case. And, of course, the goal isn't to have anybody go to court. The goal is to provide incentives for people just to pay on time and in full. But if that doesn't happen, you can go to court. But you'll also be able to file a complaint with the Department of Consumer Affairs, and they'll then send a notice of complaint to the hiring party and some next steps forward that we think not only will mean a lot of people can get paid what they're owed without ever having to go to court, but also that the city will be collecting a lot more data about these kinds of complaints and issues and put us in a really good position, not only to prevent theft of payment, but to keep making it a better place for people to do freelance jobs. You know, part of the idea here, big part of the idea, of course, is to protect people from having their wages stolen when they still need to pay their rent and put food on the table or pay their mortgage. But another piece of it is to make this a good place for gig economy workers, for freelance workers to do business. And you know, I'm pleased that the Department of Consumer Affairs has been a big part of helping figure it out. So I'm very optimistic that the mayor will sign the bill within the next month.
And Sarah, here's a question via Twitter from a listener who it looks like owns a business. And she asks, do I have to create contracts for existing or established part-time workers?
Yeah, so the goal will be that DCA will have model contracts. But one of the great resources for both small employers and freelancers out there is there's so many groups like the Freelancers Union, the Domestic Workers Union, Make the Road, who all have a vested interest in trying to enforce this, but also to help small business owners to be able to know what they should do. As Councilmember Lander was saying, the company will be the one that has to have the contract, and we're going to do everything we can to make that as easy as possible for all parties. Because once you get that clarity and people know that they have to make payment a huge priority, then we can expect that the system will just be smooth sailing and it'll be easier to have the enforcement, and we can avoid going to court, which is always bad for everybody.
One thing I just want to add, too, if people are actually part-time employees, and this is where things get a little technical, and understanding when someone's an employee and when they're an independent contractor isn't always simple. There's a lot of tests. This doesn't cover people who are properly classified as employees, whether they're part-time or full-time shift workers. They're covered by state labor law and federal labor law. This is specifically for people who are freelancers and independent contractors. And there, yes, if you have been working with someone as a regular, you know, freelancer, they write articles for you, they've done web design work, they come do repair or handiwork in your house, then in those cases going forward, you will need to put a contract in place after the law goes into effect, which will be 6 months after the mayor signs it.
Sarah, you used a phrase earlier, and listeners, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about the Freelance Isn't Free Act passed by New York City Council last week with Councilman Brad Lander from Brooklyn and Sarah Horowitz executive director and the founder of the Freelancers Union, and you used the phrase before, I think you said the new safety net. So do you see a new kind of safety net springing up in the city or this country for the new economy, which is so much more of a gig economy or sort of a freelancer's economy than the old way in which people went to work full-time for companies and stayed there for a long time?
You know, I think that what we're seeing is the emergence of the next part of the safety net. And by that, I mean recognizing that work itself is just so much shorter term and gig-based. And we use the terms freelancer and independent contractor, but that's really the trend. And so what we're going to need to do is to enact these kinds of wage theft protections, new pilots for unemployment insurance, and other things, recognizing that the huge pain point of this next economy is episodic income. People just do not have the kinds of protections that let them go through a dry spell, and everybody has a dry spell many times during the course of the year. And Freelancers Union did a study with Upwork, and what we found was that people are having to save so much for these emergency funds for the gaps between work that they're not able to save for retirement. And so this gives us insight into how we're going to build the safety net for the whole country. But like the old safety net of the New Deal era, we have to pilot it in the states. And I just would want to say one thing, especially in this federal election season. It's not that we're going to have a new safety net and we're going to get rid of the old. It's that we have to really plan for one safety net for all workers. But up till now, I think we've seen both political parties say to this next era workforce, it's not your time. And now we're starting to say that's just not true. It's a third of the workforce, and it absolutely is the time, and we will be all better off if we focus on building it now.
And on this big picture question, Councilman Lander, I saw you quoted in the New York Times on this saying that our labor laws are so badly outdated, they don't give the basic protections all workers expect, much less broader support and benefits to all workers in the growing gig economy. So what do you see as the big picture and what might be next after this?
Yeah, great question. And you know, it's ultimately, these things are going to have to be figured out at a broader level, and these should be federal policies. But for now, in the absence of action and the presence of gridlock in Washington and a lot of state capitals, there's a lot we can do at the local level. So we'll be the first city in the country to provide this kind of protection against payment theft, and I hope a lot of other cities and states will join on board. Another thing we're working to do here is that the New York City human rights law, like most civil rights and human rights laws at the city, state, and federal level around the country, when they created the employment protections under those laws, they mostly just brought in the traditional definition of worker. And so it's not clear in a lot of cases that, the freelancers or Uber drivers or independent workers have employment protections under our civil and human rights laws. So that's an easy fix, and one I'm optimistic we'll do in New York City soon, and we want to see other places do all around the country. We've heard stories not just of wage theft, but of discrimination against workers who don't have clear claims under those laws. The next frontier after that are some of the portable benefits funds that people are working to set up. My colleague Corey Johnson and I introduced legislation in the council to establish a driver benefits fund funded by a small surcharge for taxi and for hire and Uber and other drivers. And that's work that I think people are doing in a lot of different places, starting to think about healthcare, retirement security, and benefits like time, paid time off, how to get a mortgage if you have episodic income. And then there is some thinking also, they did legislation in Seattle that got some attention around Uber drivers there, how to provide a framework for organizing as well. Freelancers Union, one great example of that here, and organized the freelancers to get the payment theft law changed, but especially where those workers are largely dependent on one company, like in the case of Uber or Lyft, we'll probably need a new organizing framework there. So there's a lot to do, a lot of things to figure out as we're writing new rules for a whole new economy. But we are excited to have New York City out in front in trying to get some of those rules right.
And so we should also mention that the bill stipulates that freelancers who don't receive full payment on time are to receive double the amount in damages currently mandated for this violation if they win in court. So there's that extra incentive or disincentive to commit wage theft on the part of the employers because of the double damages or the doubling of the damages. But
let me just add attorney's fees as well, a big disincentive for freelancers trying to collect what they're owed in court. Is that the cost of hiring the lawyer could be more than the claim you're owed.
That's right.
And unfortunately, hiring parties sometimes use that to put pressure on people to take less.
But on the big picture, Sarah, that we were talking about before, I don't know if this is just a Halloween scare story, when I'm going to put it this way, or if it's really something to be afraid of. The labor leader, Andy Stern, the huge labor leader, Andy Stern, one of the most influential labor people in this country in this century, formerly of the Service Employees Union, has a book that I interviewed him on this year saying work as we know it is over in this country, largely because of automation, and everything's going to be freelance, basically. And he proposes a guaranteed national income as the best solution. How close to any of that are either of you in terms of your projections or your solutions, Sarah?
Yeah. You know, I think that what we're really seeing is we're at this epicenter of huge change. And so we're all trying to say, what will that be? But what I know for sure is that, number one, we have to recognize that work, people are going to still work, and their work is going to be short term, and that we need to build up the protections recognizing that. And then to attach those protections to the individual, so the individual can choose this freelance worker. Who do I want to have represent me for my benefits and other things? And once we start building out our portable benefits around the individual to the groups that they want, that will be the constituency that will be able to start articulating to the democracy what kind of changes we want. What I fear about some of the guaranteed minimum income conversation is that it's coming from Silicon Valley, and as we're looking at the disruptive technologies, it feels like a little bit of a way to talk about it. And I think it's an important conversation that we have to have in looking at how we're going to take care of all citizens. But I think the more important conversation is, how are we going to build up constituencies? And if there's one thing I think both the council member and I have learned from watching this, is Freelancers Union could craft a Freelance Isn't Free Act because we heard from our members. And organizations and unions are going to be the critical institutions in this next era, and we need a government that wants to see those built, not to reduce everybody to isolated individuals. So what I hope for coming out of this conversation is not how are we going to get cash transfers to individuals, but how are we going to build back real civil society institutions that will have power in a democracy to talk about what workers really need. And I don't just mean one set of workers. I mean low wage to high wage, professional to day laborers. We're all in this together, and that was the constituency that passed the Freelance Isn't Free Act, and I'm convinced that's going to be the constituency that's going to build this next era labor movement across the country.
Interesting. Really fascinating. Last question then. You know, I was anticipating, since you passed this, but the mayor hasn't announced yet whether he's going to sign it, Brad, that employers would say, there goes the de Blasio, Melissa Mark Viverito socialist agenda again, gumming up the works of the marketplace, making it harder for workers and employers alike to come to terms on things. But I looked up just this one randomly, so you'll fill me in, but I looked up the Brooklyn Chamber of Commerce to see if they were taking a stand against it, because they've taken a stand against other kinds of employer mandates in the past. And the statement that I saw looked to me like it was supportive of this bill, as just kind of regularizing and making it clear to employers what their obligations are for freelancers. So is there an employer coalition arguing against you out there?
Well, on this bill, as you point out around the Brooklyn Chamber of Commerce, and as I was very excited, this was a unanimous bill in the city council. The first one I've ever had that was unanimous, 51 to 0.
Wow.
So we only have three Republicans, but they voted for it, and that includes two Trump supporters. so even if Donald Trump thinks it's okay to stiff people, the GOP members of the city council know.
You had to get that in there, didn't
well,
you?
Well, you know. One basic rule of the emerging economy is everybody ought to be paid on time and in full for the work they do.
Right.
And at least at the council, we all agree on that. I think Sarah's point that new organizing and new models of protection need to get built out, some of those, obviously, as we're seeing in the fights around Uber and other things, won't be so unanimous.
Yeah.
But at least in this case, everybody's on board.
Well, we've been looking for the new center of American politics, the new consensus in our fractured land, and maybe we've found it with the Freelancers and Free Act passed unanimously, now I know, by the New York City Council last week, spearheaded by, among others, Brad Lander, who chairs the Committee on Rules, Privileges, and Elections, and is a founding co-chair of the Council's Progressive Caucus. And from outside the council, Sarah Horowitz, founder and executive director of the Freelancers Union and co-author of the book, The Freelancers Bible, Everything You Need to Know to Have the Career of Your Dreams on Your Terms. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care now.